The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Now, Sarah Rhys-Brennan is an award-winning Irish author. She has had best-selling books, mainly aimed at kids and teens. She's written for streaming giants like Netflix, for example. And she is apparently in her latest novel, Love, Life, Evil, embracing her inner villain as well. Sarah Rhys-Brennan is with me in studio. Sarah, thanks a million for coming in to us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So how's the book being received? Love, Life, Evil.
Long Live Evil. Long Live Evil is doing really well, which is, I think, obviously due to my great genius, but also due to, I think, a lot of fantasy readers. People grew up reading fantasy and they'd like to read adult fantasy now. And I think perhaps anyone who's ever watched a Disney musical knows that the villains have more fun. They have the best musical numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So they see the story of someone going into their favorite fantasy novel and realizing they're the villain as both a fun thing and kind of an adult moment in their lives. You know, when you realize, oh, am I the hero of this story? Maybe not.
Okay. So, yeah, I guess even the title is a celebration of it, you know, of evil and a clarion call in its name and everything. It's born, though, of a bit of personal experience that or certainly the experience of the main character reflects personal experience. Is that fair?
It would be. Come with me back through the mists of time. It was long ago. I was writing YA novels. My life was going pretty great. I never had to get up before noon, which is crucial for me. And then, you know, I kept getting a cough. I kept getting pneumonia and bronchitis. And I kept going to doctors and they were like, oh, you seem okay. Actually, you've dropped some weight. You seem really good. And so I was like, okay. And meanwhile, my writing had really fallen off a cliff. And I just didn't know what it was about. I was just really worried because I think anyone who's in creative pursuits is like, oh God, what if I lose it all one day? And I also became, you know, much more irritable and had much less time and patience for other people. And then finally, I was actually on a trip home from Australia where I was spending some months. And my mother was like, go into our local GP and get that cough checked out. So I went in. And my GP took bloods and then she was like, oh, you're not going anywhere. I had late stage lymphoma. And that was quite a shock to me. Although thanks, Mom, for telling me to go get the cough checked out. But also in some ways it was a relief because I had an explanation. Because for ages I was like, maybe I'm just terrible at everything and also mean now. But it still took a long time to recover my self-confidence. I was like, maybe I'm not a writer anymore. And then it was during the pandemic and I saw how everyone had, you know, watched all of Netflix, watched Tiger King.
Yeah.
They were reading all these books that they've been meaning to read. And I was like, you do need stories. There's a poem that goes, will there be singing even in the dark times? And so I thought, well, let's try for some singing in the dark times. Let's write about someone escaping into their favorite story and try to make it fun as well as dark.
Experience of cancer, is that kind of in the past now? Are there still kind of lingering health concerns that you've got to deal with?
Well, I was very lucky. I do have chronic health issues now. I have scarred lungs and things. So sometimes I sound, when I get a cold, I sound like Darth Vader with a mouse trapped in his suit.
Oh, that's a very, very specific thing.
Exactly.
Darth Vader with a mouse trapped in a suit. Okay.
That's a specific squeak.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, I was so lucky. There are a lot of people who, you know, I mentor now people with cancer as a sort of way to give back. And there's an exclusive gold Irish edition of Long Live Evil. And I'm donating my part of the proceeds to St. Vincent's Cancer Research. So if anyone feels like a treat, buy it guilt-free. It's for charity.
Oh, there you are. buy that special edition of Long Live Evil. But I know you have kind of made this comment before about your experience of the Irish healthcare system and how good it was. Because it's a system, when it's getting talked about on a show like this, it's often in a negative light because something isn't working or people are not getting seen. But your experience was the other end of the spectrum.
Oh, it was amazing. I did work in American publishing for a while and I had a writer friend and she offered me money when I was diagnosed. And I was like, oh, no, thank you. I don't need money. I mean, I'm not earning much, but my parents kindly took me back in, back to the nest. And I was like, what happens to writers in America if they get this? And she was like, they die, Sarah. They die. They mostly just die because you can't, you know, lose your house and still maybe die and do that to your family. And so because it was very serious, they saw me right away. And I thank all the staff in St. Vincent's in my acknowledgements. And somebody just today wrote to me and said, Dr. Fidel at St. Vincent's also saved my mother's life. So I was really happy when I read that. So I think the Irish healthcare system is far from perfect, as most systems are. I think there does need to be a lot more support afterwards, which is why I tried to do my bit, but also we are so much luckier than so many people around the world who were less sick than me and did die.
And tell me then about the difference in kind of process when it comes to writing a book like this for adults as opposed to the YA, the young adult books you described earlier.
Long Live Evil, I actually wrote not thinking about which audience it was
really?
For. I was just thinking about what I wanted to tell, like a fun story. I was thinking that I wanted to tell the truth about escapism, which I think it's a really bad rap because sometimes when you're in prison, you want to escape. So I wrote Lonely People thinking of all the things I enjoyed and the stories I grew up on, but also having this darker slant to them. And then I realized that it was an adult book because there's a Leonard Cohen quote, which goes, everyone has had the great disappointment of their lives. And I think that that is an adult feeling as well, being like, how do you overcome it and still find joy in it? And also, what are all the realization that so many other people have points of view? Because there's a whole team of villains going from the guy who's like, oh, I just kind of wear like fun clothes and maybe sleep around a little. And someone else is like, my solution to the problem is murder. And just thinking about that, about like the communities we find and the really different people within them, was something that was like expanded outward.
But I guess the kind of the nature of villainy, where the kind of the cartoon villain knows they're a villain, but others don't. You know what I mean? They can rationalize whatever they do in a way that maybe paints them as the kind of the hero of their story or the victim of their story or people forced into circumstances or into decisions beyond their control. Whereas kind of yours is more kind of an embracement of the villainy.
I think, yes, an embracing of it. I'm not really talking about real evil, which I think we see every day and which has really bad lines. It's really kind of dumb. But the kind of evil that we look into our own hearts at like 3 a.m, we're like, am I terrible? Does everyone hate me? And also I've thought of something and it's so mean I can't say it, but it is funny. There's the quote of like, if you can't say anything nice, sit down next to me. And so I wanted to kind of embrace that as well, being like, what if you said the thing you were thinking and some people got it and understood? And what if you looked, what if someone else looked into the dark heart of you and still loved you a lot?
So this kind of is meant to resonate with that little bit that's in all of us.
Exactly.
That voice that you kind of, you did, the inner monologue that you don't want to be make an outer monologue.
Yeah, you know, the girl puts on her deep red lipstick and goes, long live evil. And then the next day, maybe she's like, with the popcorn. But that's
so
a great moment.
What's the timeline then for writing a book like this? I mean, have you already written the next book or when does that start?
I've already written the next book.
Oh, it's done.
Yes, it's all done. It's handed into my editor. And in fact, it was late insofar as my publishers understand, because publishing works really slowly. Like I sold the book and it was already written like 2 years before it was published. It's one of the slowest things. Whereas, of course, the news moves like every day.
Yeah.
So you're like, I wrote a book and people are like, prove it. You're like, give me 2 years. But yeah, the second book is coming up and it's a trilogy. And so far, the first book seems to be going well. Touch wood.
Yeah, no, listen, it's great, I'm sure. Are you somebody who gets, is there like a period during which you're quite nervous about how it would be received? Or, you know, because I know different writers, different, some of them are very blasé and I'm not sure how much I believe them, but they claim to be very blasé about how it's received. They're kind of, they just feel like it's kind of gifted to the world now and they move on to the next project. I don't buy it at all. But I mean, so at least are you going to be honest and tell me you're nervous?
Oh, well, I mean, my book's not called Long Live Honesty. I'm a cool cucumber. No, I am really nervous. I think that I was often like, well, the book's going in the world. Let's see what the world thinks of it with earlier books that I wrote. But with this one, I am so aware of that it can, even if things go well, things can all be taken away, that it's a privilege to get to tell people's stories and I want to keep doing it. So I am more nervous than I've ever been before, perhaps because Long Live Evil means more to me than any book has before.
Because of just the personal, the element of your experience that exists within it.
Yes. And because a lot of people don't get to have a second chance. So I feel really lucky that I get to have mine. And I do want to celebrate it as well as being nervous.
So then in the second book that's already written and the publisher has, is there more of that mining of personal experience?
Definitely. A little more personal experience, because okay. there's also... because some of the people I mentor for were very kind and said that I could tell some of their stories in Long Live Evil. And sometimes when you're telling a story, you want to tell the story without being in it. It's kind of scary to put yourself in it. So with their permission, I put some of their stories in it. And in the second book, I was like, all right, come on. Trust me, I'm telling you stories. I've got to tell some more of mine, as well as expanding out toward the other characters in the narrative. Like, there's an assassin who came up from the gutter as an honorable knight. So it's sort of like if Deadpool crashed into Game of Thrones.
Oh, wow. Okay. These are great descriptions, like the mouse and Darth Vader. If Deadpool crashed into Game of Thrones, I like that. People at home will love it too. I always wonder, with writer, you must be good at managing your time, are you?
Like, no, I'm absolutely shocking at it.
Oh, right. Okay.
I wish someone would come keep me in order.
Because I thought you'd have to kind of, you know, because you don't, like, I have to be here at 1 o'clock every day. So I don't really have a choice, even though I was late today, actually. And the producer's looking at me going, what are you talking about, 1 o'clock? But, you know, in or around, 1 o'clock-ish, we'll call it. 1 o'clock-ish, I have to be here.
1 o'clock's a fine time to start work. That's when I start work myself.
Yeah, but do you start, though, at the same time every day and write for a certain amount of time? And,
Stephen King does it. I know that's super annoying. Nora Roberts goes on a treadmill for an hour and then begins writing at 6 a.m. And I guess that is why they are superstars. But I'm always pestering my friends to come write with me. I'm writing in cafes. I was once on a plane and pretended that everyone around me was like being like, she needs to finish her book. And then I shut up my laptop at the end of the flight and the woman beside me grabbed my arm. I was like, I hope it works out for them. And I was like, oh, no.
She was reading your story.
She really was reading it.
Was it an early draft?
It was. I could do better. But also, thank you for being gripped by the narrative.
Yeah, this is a good sign, a vote of confidence in it.
No, I am quite disorganized, but I love storytelling. And the thing that does get me finally in my chair is picturing telling stories to other people. I'm not kind of one of those ivory tower writers. I'm always being like, will a reader have fun with this or cry?
Okay, that's a nice way to imagine the world, how people engage with your work. So Liz, we wish you the best of luck with it. Long Live Evil is out there. And what the special edition, all the funds go to St. Vincent's.
My part of the funds go to St. Vincent's Cancer Research, yes.
Perfect.
And it's only in Ireland, so a fancy thing just for us, guys.
That's a nice gesture as well. Sarah Rees-Brennan, the author of Long Live Evil. Sarah, listen, thanks a million for coming in to us.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.